when it came to Southern hip hop, we were used to looking toward places like Atlanta, mm-hmm. New Orleans, Miami, all these metropolitan spaces. Whereas Big Kurt was saying, like, do y'all even know where Meridian is?
I'm music journalist Christina Lee.
I'm writer, researcher, and professor Dr. Regina N. Bradley.
This is Bottom of the Map.
Southern hip hop explored, explained, exalted. Miss Chris, how you?
Oh my God, I'm so good. How are you?
Country as shit, but I'm good.
What you mean by that? You're always country as shit.
I am always country as shit, but I'm extra country today because of the topic that we're talking about, which is one of our favorites here at Bottom of the Map, which is the one and only Big Crit, Big King remembered in time, Mr. Justin Scott. Thinking about how Big Crit transcends this idea genre and how his influence is part of a larger trajectory that's coming out of Mississippi that is just, for lack of a better word, just country black fried genius.
We're also going to re-examine Big Crit's catalog as proof that Americana is still alive and well.
Oh my.
Regina, what is your favorite Crit song?
Grew up on the countryside of town. Am I cooking my new? Do it for the South, y'all know. Run and raid with them rubber flag, hang hung slay, group up where you niggas won't go. Rep that shit like I own. I did it big for my family, my homes. I got the biggest house on the block, born with a drop for them times I was at your homes. Car flow, time and time again, I try to tear these niggas. Look what they say these niggas. Re-rock, old tap, dance, do whatever for a sack, give a lap dance, bitch ass nigga. Peacock, third coat, fella. 25 letters on my trunk, ain't shit changed. Rolling in the hams, image on propeller, leaning like a stretcher so clean. You think I'm out here selling cocaine? Light at the end of the tunnel. When you're flexing, it's
listen, King of the South, when I'm not feeling myself, that's what I go to. What about you?
Oh man, I have a couple. Like, I love country shit just like any other sane person. I love Big Bang. I love Saturday's Equal Celebration.
In the event of my demise, I won't go kicking and screaming. I know that God had a reason, just don't give up believing as long as the sun shines after the storm. So we don't cry at the dinner table. Rejoice and just be thankful. I made it home, second line, safe and sound. Battle with drinking, so please don't pour me no liquor. I on the curb, fight the urge to go retaliate. Carry on, just be strong enough to walk away. Speak the truth, even if they crucify me. Free my soul, even if they change my body. Look to God, if ain't nowhere to go. Beware those prophets that touch a leg before they touch a soul. We reap what we sow, when the boat, man coming, gotta pay what we owe. Jesus walks, so I run to him. How can they love me when I'm knowing what they done to him? If they kill me on Friday, bury me on Sunday, mourn for me Monday. Then you gotta let me go. Let's just jump into it. This is a I Love You Crit love letter. What is it about Crit that stands out for you both as an artist and as a producer?
From the moment that Big Crit kind of came onto the scene, he stood out. He stood out specifically because he's coming out at a time when Southern hip hop is really gaining a stranglehold onto the mainstream. People are really looking down south to figure out what the new wave is happening, right?
Right.
But the thing is that if you would compare him to an artist like a Waka Flocka, for example, people were trying to make sense of what Waka Flocka Flame was trying to do, because for better or for worse, according to whoever you ask, like, people couldn't make sense of what was actually happening. Crit was one of the rare artists that was calling specifically back to an Outkast, a UGK, and saying that he is hearkening back to a sound that he doesn't hear anymore. And he's using that to kind of plant his own freak flag on the industry. Country shit becomes the manifesto for his production outlook going forward.
Meaning what?
I think it's his manifesto going forward because it isn't as literal of a translation of these Americana genres as some of the other songs like from his catalog. That's basically Big Crit articulating, like, you know what I'm gonna give to you, it's not gonna be that metropolitan shit most of the time.
Because, like, I'm not metropolitan.
Because he's not metropolitan. I mean, when I hear that song, I really hear him kind of just issuing out like a mission statement. Shake it more, for him, put my shrimp on my plate. Country by, country
by, what it take. Let me tell you about this superfly, dirty. When we think about the South, it is still very flat. It's a flattened representation of what the South is, what it can do. And it's usually through the lens of a white Southern experience. And Mississippi is an interesting
representation of that, because Mississippi has a couple of things going against it. It has this historical narrative against it for being, you know, racially traumatic, racially violent. It has the social economic conditioning, at least that's what they like to tell you, right? So like, if you're thinking about literacy, if you're thinking about protest, if you're thinking about even obesity to a point, Mississippi is always on folks' mouth, you know what I'm saying? But they can't seem to fix their face to recognize that in the same vein that trauma details what Mississippi is, genius also details what comes out of Mississippi, and crit is just part of a long line of that. If we're thinking about exports coming out of Mississippi, clearly blues is at the top of that list when we're thinking about music, right? So not only are we thinking about somebody like the very mysterious Robert Johnson.
Me and the devil, we're walking side by side.
To folks like Muddy Waters. Lead Belly.
In the pines where the sun don't ever shine, I bet she will all night too.
Thinking about Crit in that conversation, he has a lot to pull from when we think about, you know, Mississippi blues. And ultimately, that blues connection is especially amplified in hip-hop, to a point where somebody like Ali Colleen Neff wrote a book, Let the World Listen Right, The Mississippi Delta Hip-Hop Story. So, I mean, like, there are always these connections, and I think that it's important to uncover or unearth, if you will, what those deeper influences are when we think about the larger collection of Southern hip-hop, especially coming out of Mississippi.
And correct me if I'm wrong, Regina, but I think Crit makes that connection clear even in country shit, because isn't he talking about that third, close, muddy water, so on and so forth?
Yeah. Between the lines. I'm so proud. I'm so, so proud.
Thank you.
I mean, like, definitely Muddy Waters in terms of the artist, but also Muddy Waters when you think about the Delta and Mississippi. It's brilliant. The man's brilliant. We're about genealogies here at Bottom of the Map. We like to show you that folks didn't just come out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. And Crit has such a fascinating genealogy, I feel like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why wouldn't we talk with me? Okay. So, literary-wise, Black Mississippi genius has been documented for decades. You probably are familiar with somebody like a Richard Wright with Native Son and Bigger Thomas. But you also have some folks like Mildred Taylor, who was my favorite childhood author coming up, who was, you know, who wrote Roll of Thunder, Hear My Cry, the series. You also have Ann Moody, who wrote Coming of Age in Mississippi, which is extremely dope. You also have, you know, more recent folks like Jasmine Ward, Kiese Layman. Visually, you have folks like John Jennings. They are countering this idea of Mississippi from a white perspective, because if you think Mississippi and if you think the South, you automatically go to somebody like William Faulkner. So Faulkner with Yaknapatawpha County, which is really a thing, right? And you have folks like Kiese Layman, who's like, nah, we ain't gonna do that shit. We're gonna flip it and give you a Malahatchie, Mississippi. So that idea of world building that really kind of takes place within Mississippi is especially potent, I think, because they are pushing back not only against a historical narrative, but also countering this idea of erasure. From the hip hop side of it, you know, Crit follows a long line of folks like Crooked Lettuce, the Mississippi duo comprised of Brad Kamikaze Franklin and David Banner. And they had their solo album released in 1999, Great Skies. So they had a little bit of everybody on there, from Pimp C to Noriega. So Get Crunk is the Pimp C joint. That's really, really good. And then I think the single that came off of there was Caught in the Game.
And then, of course, now when we talk about Mississippi hip hop, the most obvious example that comes to mind, at least for me anyway, is Ray Shrimmer, the Black Beatles themselves.
Yeah. From Tupelo.
Is a real crowd, please. Small world, all the friends know of me. Young bull living like an old geese.
With Crit, I mean, even legacy-wise, you know, you mentioned how he is at the feet of somebody like an Outkast. So you can't talk about a Catalactica without an ATLians or without a Stankonia. I'm thinking about songs like, you know, Two Dope Boys in a Cadillac, for example, that immediately comes to mind. And even something like, you know, the title track ATLians. It's like, let's establish how we can represent for where we're from while still playing with this kind of like speculative idea about where we can go and where that can head. And then you get something like a Stankonia, which really is like the ultimate world building for them. Like this is them finally, like Outkast is finally transitioning into this literal stank world of their own. It makes room to talk about these different experiences that take place in the South. And I think you can also put, you know, something like, what's some good songs on Stankonia, Miss Chris? I mean, Spaghetti Junction comes to mind.
Bombs Over Baghdad.
Bombs Over Baghdad. Even like Gasoline Dreams to an extent.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Allows like this possibility, like, hey, we have this whole idea, this whole world going on over here, and y'all are just from the outside looking in. Let me put you on game real quick.
So why is it particularly important for Crit to build a world of his own in that same sense?
Because if we, you know, keep pulling up this theory that the South is not a monolith, then I think the worlds that exist within the South, culturally, creatively, also are not a monolith. And Mississippi-influenced Southernness and Southern landscapes are different than Georgia and Atlanta landscapes. And he just was like, oh, since we making worlds, let me introduce this possibility of something like a Catalactica.
What you think a real nigga rap for? So I can roll around in the rap for. Never that, Cadillac, pimp, die, fish, bone, true, bone, 15. But I had to go and get two more. What's up, get bucks, shake, dunk, killer. DJ Boop with a pole in the middle for the edge of the rest, you a flexible bitch. See how far these vegetable gifts. Pull up the show, up the focus. The dough ain't typical when they get open. Hold up, he ain't never been sky high. Swear I could've died when I hopped on my ride like 4 or 5 times. No parachute, but a jump for the loop. Honk a loogie at the root when I feel like. Pouring on the screen, two holes on the scene. Tongue kissing, you would think my will die. Cadillac, let, Cadillac, let.
I feel like hip hop really kind of suffers from being more of an umbrella term compared to like a rock music, where you have punk and post punk and grunge and, like you said, 100 million subgenres. Mm-hmm. And that's because I think by having everything under the hip hop umbrella, there's unfair comparisons being drawn. So let's break down how Crit fits into the genre like Americana. So by definition, Americana pulls from traditions like blues, rock, gospel, folk music, bluegrass, all these genres that we understand to be the fabric of American music, right?
Yes. This whole idea about Americana as a Southern studies scholar really fascinates me because Americana is painted white, but that's not the case. I just feel like what's interesting is like for folks like Faulkner, they can melt so easily into an American landscape and they'll be like, kind of going back to the idea of the gatekeeper, like they are the reason, oh, Mississippi, automatically William Faulkner, no question. You know what I'm saying? In ways that if you say Mississippi and Richard Wright, I mean, like for African American literature, yeah, he is the go-to. But I mean, like just in general, folks are kind of hesitant to be like, really? Like, this is Americana? Is this what you really think?
So it's works that are, like, really foundational to our cultural landscape. Yeah. Okay, got it.
They're foundational. Like, they're not questioned, right? I think the word that I'm looking for here is also they are normalized in such a way that if you get a narrative or an experience that is counter or outside of that framework that they give you, then folks like to ask questions. As a music journalist, when you hear Americana, what comes to mind for you?
The first thing that came to mind was somebody like a Ryan Adams. Somebody who had whose hair was like a little bit disheveled and always posed in front of an American flag on their album covers and things like that. Most of my understanding of Americana is actually due to an MTV piece by Charles Aaron, like one of the best music journalists that I've come to read. Essentially, the way that he sort of described it was that Americana was even sort of a response to how mainstream country was starting to embrace like alt country. So really, it was like countercultural in this respect. Americana came to encompass artists like a Mumford & Sons, a Kacey Musgraves, Sturgill Simpson, Chris Stapleton, folks that were really sort of pushing the genre, like whether that's country or related to Southern rock in like new and interesting directions. The really interesting point that Charles Aaron makes in his MTV piece, though, is that there is still a color divide. I'm just going to read it from him. He says, "One egregious absence remains. Aside from a smattering of soul legends taking late career victory laps like Mavis Staples, William Bell, Booker T, Alan Toussaint, fewer artists of color have been enthusiastically received in the Americana subdivision during the 2000s than in mainstream country of the 1970s. These issues of representation are still persisting, even though their politics are supposedly better.
You have Black artists who can check off these, I guess, the Wikipedia checkpoints, right? Like Americana does this, this, and this. I'm thinking about, you know, Alabama Shakes, for example, right? And who are amazing.
Brittany Howard.
Yes, Brittany Howard can sing, child. Right? But it's like, we don't recognize that in a way that we would if they were like at the Country Music Awards. You know what I'm saying? And then, of course, you know, you have other interventions too with Black popular music. I mean, Lil Nas X, we've talked about, you know, the schnookle. He's schnookle. I'm thinking also about Beyonce even with Lemonade and Daddy Lessons.
Yeah.
Right? To the point where she literally turned Americana on its ear when she performed at the Country Music Awards with who other than the Dixie Chicks.
Oh my right? gosh. Right?
Just really like changed the game. Right. You know what I mean? So I'm wondering if we like to think about popular culture as a way to battle and have these really sensitive conversations, but unfortunately, sometimes those conversations fall flat because we want to be comfortable and just be like, oh, it's just entertainment. Folks like Crit really are like, yeah, it's entertainment. However, let me really speak to some of this real shit that's happening in ways that not only will it, you know, it's edutainment. Like, it'll entertain you, but also, like, make you, like, sit you down and think. Crit really stood out for me with Mount Olympus.
Now they wanna hear country nigga rap. Five albums in, I swear a country nigga snap. Thought they wanted trap. Thought they wanted bass. Thought they wanted Miley. Thought they wanted drink. Fuck them niggas. Now they wanna hear country nigga rap.
Mount Olympus is my shit. I love that shit. But, I mean, like, there's also additional meaning behind it because he talks about the control beef. Miss Chris, what was the control beef? And we ain't talking Janet.
47 years ago, i.e. in 2013, Big Sean released a record that featured Kendrick Lamar called Control, which is ironic because Big Sean had absolutely zero control over said song.
Ooh.
Kendrick takes control out of the entire thing because he just eviscerates the entire song, calls himself the King of New York, and then calls out a whole list host of rappers, basically saying, I challenge you. Big Crit was one of those names that Kendrick Lamar specifically called out.
And them niggas should know what time it is. And that goes for Jermaine Cole, Big Crit, Wale, Pusha T, Meek Mills, A$AP Rocky, Drake, Big Sean, J Electron, Tyler McMillan. I got love for you all, but I'm trying to murder you niggas. Trying to make sure your core fans never heard of you niggas. They don't want to hear not one more noun or verb from you niggas.
Even though I remember journalists at the time trying to pin this on everybody else and being like, oh, what beef is Kendrick Lamar trying to start with all these rappers? The way that Crit saw it was like, okay, no, this is like some friendly competition stuff. This is exactly what hip hop is about. Hip hop is very much about rising to the challenge. And he did so with the response track, Mount Olympus.
Ooh, and did he ever.
All this attention, I don't even know what I might do with it. That control beat is like an ugly bitch that everybody done fuck wrong. Maybe you hit it. Oh, man, I'm more concerned about niggas been texting my cell, calling my phone, asking me about this Kendrick shit. They ain't even really diss me on. I ain't drawn all this propaganda. Rap shit about the realest sound. Now I'm lyrical all of a sudden. Well, last year they claim they ain't understand me. I'm bare niggas. And pissing on they graves. Another nigga, other nigga name on your chain, and they call me a slave. Nigga scared of this country ball. Lord forbid I catch a bite in the studio, trying to calm your soul, looking at your manager. I think Krill's a guy, man. I'll put you in the trunk with these soul wool. Feel wheel in my shot. I'm so prolific with these scriptures, they might give me a bow.
Taking like something that's immediately recognizable, like a Mount Olympus, which in Greek mythology is where all the gods live. Subverting that, I think, like I read it as a subversion of Dr. King's metaphor of the mountaintop. And I've said this repeatedly, the mountaintop's not flat. There's no romantic idea about how to maneuver, and Crit is using hip hop to show how those maneuvers are starting to happen, what those challenges are, what those concerns are. As a creative, as a Mississippian, you know, going back to this idea of erasure, you know, Americana seems like it's an all-encompassing kind of like warm, gooey feeling. But the reality of that is exactly what you were pointing out, is that there are still very much racial lines in place that are dictated in ways that, you know, the music allows us to kind of confront those facts. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely.
hey, real quick, before we go to the break, if you have not already subscribed to Bottom of the Map on social media, BOTM Pod on every platform you got, please do it, because we be having some really interesting conversations on there. I be acting a fool. Chris be correcting me. It's a whole thing. Make sure you subscribe.
Also, folks love to ask us, where can we find that piece that Regina cited in the episode? Where can we find a playlist of the songs that are featured on the episodes? Well, guess what? We already have you covered.
We got you.
If you sign up for our newsletter at bottomofthemap.media, you will receive our weekly newsletter that has all that exclusive shit.
All the exclusive shit.
Hey, you guys, this is Tank of Tank and the Vengas, and you are listening to Bottom of the Map.
Welcome back from the break. We've been talking about how Crit is kind of like this keeper of the flame, so to speak, of Southern Black musical traditions. But now it's time for us to really show you these receipts and show you how Crit really gets down. So let's get into it, shall we?
When you listen closely to Crit's music, what are some of the musical influences that he's actually pulling from? The way that he's talked about it, he's talked about his influences as like whatever he heard his grandmother playing, right? But those genres just also happen to be blues, gospel, jazz, folk, R&B. He's pulling from the very same genres that comprise Americana. He just happens to do it within the space of hip hop. You have Big Crit collaborating with B.B. King on Praying Man, specifically because his grandmother used to play B.B. King in the house. That is how he made that connection to start. He learns from gospel music, specifically like from his grandmother. And, you know, given the fact that they are born Southerners, it makes all the sense of the world that they're listening to the very same music that makes up Americana.
Yes, I was on the road, didn't know which way to go. I think I hear a praying man coming.
He toys with all these different genres, and really there's like some interesting experimentation going on, because while he's just as capable of collaborating with like a B.B. King, he can also fall in with like a Gary Clark Jr.
What's good, Gary? This one for the people. Black and Blue remix. Let's go, shout.
So Big Crit and Gary Clark Jr. actually go pretty far back, right? So after Gary Clark Jr. released his 2012 major label album Black and Blue, Crit went ahead and remixed some of the tracks on that on a mixtape.
When you're feeling down and out, when you're feeling black and blue, you should feel like you can come to me.
Yes.
You know, somebody else who is also very much like updating the same American music traditions and just kind of doing it in their own way, Gary Clark Jr., like his first two albums, he would toy with hip hop there and there. I think he still kind of does. And I know he and Crit have worked together in the past. But people, when people looked at that, I think they were expecting that he just covered Jimi Hendrix ad infinitum, or like continue on the blues, traditional blues sound ad infinitum. Which is really fascinating that people constrain somebody like a Gary Clark Jr. when you think about like how people are growing up with hip hop as previous musicians grew up with blues music.
In the same ways that we think about genealogy in terms of community building, this is what it sounds like. And reclamation, even, Crit is doing that reclamation work. He's like, oh, no, 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 don't forget. Like, you know, black people can be folk people, too. You know what I'm saying? And make it sound good. But the other thing I was thinking about, too, as you were talking, was in terms of, like, sonic connections, sonic, you know, genealogies, is his adamance about not sampling. Like, if he can't, he won't. For me, it makes me think about an organized noise.
Oh, okay.
Like the influence of an organized noise, using that funk influence, using live instrumentation, using original production, original beats, you know what I'm saying? I mean, on the one hand, it's they don't have to worry about clearance and clearance checks. But on the other hand, it's like, no, let me show you I can do both sides of the booth.
When Big Crit is sampling, he's sampling songs like Tell Me Why Our Love Has Turned Cold by Willie Hutch, as he does in Big Bank with T.I. and Manny Fresh.
I got big bank chasing on a motherfucker. Ain't shit trying, cause I'm still getting steel. Ain't no love for a hater trying to fly.
which also happens to be the same song that 3-6 Mafia sampled for Stay Fly. He is sampling from like a very specific moment in time. Big Crit is usually giving a side eye toward the music industry in particular, being like, you know, so this is my interpretation of the music that y'all are not playing anymore.
Right. So his ability to sonically blur the binary of past and present using black music that's coming out of the South, I think is extremely, extremely dope.
With songs like Keep the Devil Off.
That's my shit.
Like, right.
Lord, as my wiz got to keep the devil off.
Right. Like, that is gospel to the T, right?
Yes.
Can't worry about no snakes. What good, no riches. If 6 feet under, Lord be my witness. Keep the devil off.
Even when he's playing music supervisor, as he did on a Bun B's Return to the Trill, you know, he's working with folks like a Gary Clark Jr., but then also like a Leon Bridges, like folks that are well-versed in folk and R&B as well as Southern rock, to really kind of contextualize Return to the Trill and kind of like sort of give like this historical context almost.
I feel like it's a reaffirmation because folks like Bun B, working with, you know, folks like UGK and Pimp C, already had like that deep investment in soul music. Mm-hmm. And the soul aesthetic.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
So it's just like, of course, Chris going to be like, I'm not going to steer too far away from that original, like your original signature sound. You know what I mean? And I think that that does so much. It pays homage in such really interesting and useful ways.
Just to piggyback off what you were talking about in terms of lineage, like Big Crit certainly wouldn't be here without UGK, because at the time when UGK is coming out, you notice that multiple times, Pimp C especially,
he is branding it.
He is branding it, because he's saying like, we are not, he even goes as far as to say like, we're not doing hip hop songs, we're doing some country rap songs.
Yeah.
And like, you know, for him, like that is a point of pride, because you know, he's saying like, fine, y'all can have your hip hop, but we're doing something different over here, and we're not going to be beholden to your expectations.
Folks know Crip as a commercial artist with a record label, but he also had a really ridiculous mixtape game. Do you feel like his ideas of sound and what, you know, and manipulating sound and making sound present these particular narratives, do you feel like that's stronger on his mixtapes or on his commercial releases?
As far as Crit goes, I feel like everything sort of does happen for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
I know with the mixtape game, like being in the mixtape game where you don't have, you're giving the shit out for free,
right.
So therefore you don't have to pay like for sample clearances or anything like that. He was more prone to a sampling. If he didn't have to abide by the constraints that major label releases provided, he might not have then dabbled into the live production that he's known for today. He might not have then incorporated more of the live instrumentation that allowed him to really diversify and get more experimental as a producer. So I feel like with Crit, at least, he's always sort of remained true to the country shit vision. It was just the means of getting there were always going to depend on whether he was doing a mixtape or whether he was doing an album. I feel like Crit is one of those unique artists that at a time where radio was a huge concern, and he does address that as a concern, he never wavered in order to really cater to radio, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. So it's like, you know, I don't have to cater to who my audience is. There is a means that, it's almost like, you know, how we talk about how like things are like hidden in plain sight. I just feel like as a Southerner, he's really like slapping you across the face with this, like, ha ha ha, you don't expect me to do anything as a Southerner anyway. Let me really like smack you across the, face with it.
I think radio has always kind of been in the periphery. As recently as Forever Is a Mighty Long Time, of the Justin Scott song in particular.
Okay, you don't understand. Justin Scott put me in my feelings. Like,
why?
Because it's nothing but an instrumental, but it takes me to a place, I feel like I have me a brown drink in a juke joint in the corner, like, just been a fucked up day. Like, he's giving you testimony.
But it's at the end of Justin Scott that he has that little interlude where, like, all the different voices chime in,
right,
about, like, you need to get on radio, you need to get on your radio.
You gotta get on the radio. Damn!
I feel like while Crit has seen that as the obstacle, that does sort of lend itself to the argument that I think I like to pose every now and then, which is that Southern hip hop could use more subgenres like a country rap tunes to distinguish one from the other. I think Crit looking to what is being played on radio places an unfair comparison to himself because, you know, in our minds, like, he has way more in common with B.B. King and with a Gary Clark Jr. than a lot of the peers that also made the XXL freshman list his year, even like within trap. So in a previous episode, Grab Your Trap Passport, we made the case for a subgenre by the name of global trap.
Yeah.
And we call it global trap because we wanted to distinguish a Bad Bunny from a T.I., right? Mm-hmm. I believe in hip hop at large, not just in Southern hip hop, but hip hop at large could benefit from more subgenres as we see in rock. And we therefore expand our own definition of what rock actually is by introducing these different subgenres. Hip hop doesn't have that same benefit because Big Crit is young and black and he does rap. He automatically gets pigeonholed into hip hop. But the thing is, the dude is also scat singing, just as he does on Mississippi.
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, I think between that and his production choices,
right,
he really actually has more in common with an electric blues pioneer such as B.B. King, and not to mention the modern incarnation of rock and roll such as Gary Clark Jr. In that sense, I strongly feel anyway that until we get more nuanced discussions about hip-hop, until we get more subgenres introduced into the genre, Big Crit is misclassified. Hold up.
Maybe I'm so Southern, I sometimes scare ignorant people's perception of independence. I'm from Mississippi, bitch. I'm from Mississippi, get wit.
Miss Chris, it's time for our favorite part of the episode, which is...
1, 2, 3, 4.
Welcome to the Goodie Bag, Goodie Bag. Oh, I love it. All right, what we got on deck for this week, Miss Chris?
Well, Regina, there's a song that has gone viral. For reasons that journalists are still trying to explain.
Okay.
But there is a singer, an anonymous singer, a ski mask singer by the name of Rumor.
Wait, hold the hell on. Like, legit, you can't see his face?
No.
Let me see this shit. Hold on, let me put...
Oh, cue the audio.
I wake up and teardrops, they fall down like rain. I put on that old song that we danced to, and then I head back to the trap. It's not much has changed.
What the hell?
I've been hurt and fucked up too many years ago. Hoping I could come up quick along the broken road. Well, I hustled and found a plug. From the extra, show me love. Now I'm flexing in a wreck. They hating on me too. And every sleepless night led me to where I am. Bitches that broke my heart, they became hoes that scam. Show me a better way. Promise I'll quit this game. This much I know it's true. I came up and so could you, and fuck the boys in blue. Fuck them all. Fuck 12.
Immediate response. So this sounds like Lil Nas X's older cousin who got the courage to be like, let me sing my country music truth. He got Old Town Road, I got Rascal. I mean, it's great. I mean, I feel like it goes back into everything that we've been saying since the beginning of this podcast, like ever. Like, black folks can't be put into a box. We gonna remix some shit. This is a remix. He remixes, like, urban aesthetics associated with hip-hop, with country music. Taking something like Fuck the Police, which is very hip-hop, which is very West Coast, and then using, you know, the nickname for it, which is 12, right? And then being like, harmonizing this shit while his friends silently sway in the back. That's what took me out.
Oh, my God.
The friends. What you think, Miss Chris? Help me through these thoughts.
Let me run you through a timeline, Regina.
Oh, thank you. Please, give me something.
Okay, so On February 27th, I emailed Super Producer Floyd.
Okay.
The subject said, the most surreal Off-White cameo I've seen in a minute. So, because if you remember in the music video, he is wearing an Off-White, like Virgil Abloh shirt underneath that, that bulletproof vest. I just thought it was funny because we had come out from our High Museum of Art in Atlanta appearance, which was all about Virgil Abloh, the Benadryl. And Floyd writes back, I played this video 4 to 5 times today and my mind is still blown. So this is... I'm sorry to call you out by your name, Floyd, but that is pretty much the general reaction. I think now that I've sat with this video for a little bit, here's what I think.
Mm-hmm.
I think that if you isolate the song from like the actual imagery, which as you said, is very much rooted in how like hip hop like sort of presents itself.
Mm-hmm.
Would this song, with this cover, with this remix, be getting nearly as much attention without that imagery? That's the question that I ask myself.
So it is the Lemonade question.
Ooh.
No, it's the Lemonade question. It's like, you know, you have the visual album for Lemonade, which has all the really deep, dope, you know, themes and shit. But if you just listen to it just as the album, you don't get those additional layers. Mm-hmm. So it makes you question, like, the visualization. I mean, like, he got some harmony to him, too. It's not like he's just out here, like, you know.
The song begins as pretty faithful covers of these Rascal Flatts songs.
Yeah.
Bless the Broken Road and These Days. The song begins as pretty faithful covers before he gets off into the fuck 12.
It's an immediate representation there. Black folks, there's a little bit of everything on our playlist, depending on how we're feeling. It depends
it's
on how we're feeling. And he, you know, to have Rascal Flatts, I think in the interview he put on Rolling Stone, he was talking to like, or listening to Toby Keith. So ultimately, you know, Dr. Bradley's verdict for this is that I think it's different, but it's dope. Like, it continuously shows us that black folks can't be put into a box, whether it's a sound booth or a, you know, a billboard list. Yeah. We're going to do whatever the fuck we want.
Yeah. Perhaps I'm reaching here, but I think this probably also speaks to, I guess, the barriers of entry when it comes to black artists and this country music space.
Right.
Because I'm looking at the visual presentation as a way to kind of surpass all of that, right? I think to me, this also kind of speaks a little bit to, I guess, like how white the country music industry is in that sense as well. So shout out to Charles Holmes, Otter God on Twitter, this Rolling Stone staff writer who actually got to talk with the dude. The interview doesn't seem to reveal much, honestly, about this
dude. Which is probably intentional.
Which is absolutely intentional. Mm-hmm. If he's going to call himself a hip-hop marshmallow, then it's absolutely intentional.
Wow.
We've talked about this before with, like, the, I guess, some of the trap episodes. Like, there's a trap for that. When folks distinguish themselves as a hip-hop answer to insert non-hip-hop thing there, they're saying, like, basically, like, as black artists, they have to insert themselves into a particular space.
Mm-hmm. With that being said, Ms. Chris, we're not... Look, we done heard Rascal, we done heard, you know, Mr. Rumor and how he feels about it. He gave us his true thug feelings to a country beat. What we got going on for next week?
Next week, we're going to be revisiting a really important song as far as inserting conversations about mental health into Southern hip hop. We're going to be talking about Mind Playing Tricks on Me, and Ghetto Boys, and the legacy it left behind.
All right, y'all be easy. We'll see y'all next week.
Thank you for listening to Bottom of the Map, brought to you by WABE and PRX. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please leave a review. It will help more people find this show. Follow Bottom of the Map on your social media platforms at BOTMPod. Again, that's BOTMPod. Bottom of the Map is hosted by Christina Lee and Dr. Regina N. Bradley. Produced by Floyd Hall. That's me. Edited and mixed by Stephen Major Key. Our executive producers are Jaan Berry and John Haas. Our theme music is produced by Smith and Cash. Special thanks to Mike Johns and Lois O.G. Reitzes. This program was made possible in part by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people. Follow, subscribe, connect. Holla.
It's as they say in international players' anthem, Mike, I choose you.